From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the sixth day of December 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises Incorporated in Mandeville, Louisiana. And a bit later in the program, TGM's own Matt Bennett will be here to take up the cash grain market. He's in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, the UN is calling for an improvement in governance of large-scale agricultural investments. The EU wants the WTO to rule against an Argentine regulation that it says closes that market to European goods, and Smithfield Foods' quarterly earnings have plummeted. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the details, and then I'll tell you how decades of University of Illinois research is now narrowing in on some possible solutions to help make sure that nitrates don't enter the water system. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up on Thursday for the CME Group in Chicago. December soft red winter wheat settled 3 cents higher at $8.45 and a quarter. The July there at $8.73, a settlement price up 3.5 cents. In Kansas City, the July settled at the hard red $9.19 and three quarters, and that was 5.5 cents higher. From the corn pit in Chicago, these are closes and not settlement prices. December futures 7.46 and a quarter on the close, 7 cents lower. The March at 7.50 and a quarter, down 7.5. In the May, 7.50 and a half, down 8 cents. July corn 7.47 and a half on the close, 5 and a quarter lower. And December futures, a close at 6.43 and a half, down 2 cents. January soybeans up 10 and three quarters of a cent, $14.90 the close. The March at 14.84 and a half, up 10 and three quarters. The May down 1/4 of a cent at $14.50 and a half. And July soybeans at 14.52 and a quarter, up 12 and three quarters. August futures 14.24 and a half, up 11 and three quarters. November beans at 13.34 and three quarters, 2 3/4 of a cent higher. Bean meal futures at 4.58, up 4.80. Bean oil at 50.87, up 21 for the day. Live cattle futures February contract at 131, 2.5, 50 cents higher. The March feeders at $150.80 on a settlement, up $1.75. And lean hogs in the Febs at 84.45, finished $1.20 lower. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. January crude oil futures at $86.21 a barrel, down $1.67 at this hour. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price is 4 2/10 of a cent lower, $2.59 and a half. And the ethanol trading at $2.40, down 2 1/10 of a cent. The difference between the two today is 19.5 cents. Natural gas at $3.66 3/10. That's 3 7/10 of a cent lower for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.93 8/10. That's 5 2/10 of a cent lower. And the gold futures on the day at $1,780 an ounce, up $8. The U.S. dollar at 80.26 is up 0.48 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. This comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Should see mostly cloudy skies with a high near 50 degrees on a south wind at 8 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, a 40% chance of showers. That'll come after midnight. It'll be cloudy with a low of 41 degrees, and then tomorrow, 50% chance of showers continues. Cloudy at a high of 51, light and variable winds out of the east, and Friday evening, a 30% chance of showers. Cloudy and a low of 40 degrees. The winds will come from the north on Friday evening. Saturday, mostly cloudy, a high of 49, north winds at 6 to 8. Saturday night, a 50% chance of rain, mostly cloudy and a low of 40. Sunday, rain likely, cloudy and 47 degrees. The chance of precipitation on Sunday is 70% in the area. That will continue into Sunday evening, with rain maybe changing to snow, a low of 32 degrees. Monday, a chance of flurries, mostly cloudy, and high of just 35 degrees. Monday evening, a low of 23 and partly cloudy. Tuesday, sunny and 35. And Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 27. On Wednesday, sunny skies and 42 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the closing market report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is the sixth day of December 2012. On the phone line with us from Mandeville, Louisiana, and CGB Enterprises is Dan Zwicker. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Let's start next week. You and I both will be on the road next week. And you're on the road a little bit more often than I am, but we'll be trouncing around some of the same places. Early in the week, I'll be in Champaign, and then on Tuesday up at Sycamore. We'll be in Galesburg with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits on Wednesday, down to Mount Vernon. That's a long trip from one place to the other on Thursday. And we'll wind up in Bloomington on Friday. And you'll be out in about two. Where are you going to be next
week? Well, I'll be at up in Dwight on Monday morning. So I'm flying into Bloomington on Sunday, and I see the Bloomington thermometer is going to be in the teens for Monday morning, so I guess I'm going to get a good dose of cold weather. Tuesday, move up to the Patriot Anawan ethanol plant. On Tuesday lunch, I'm at Utica. Wednesday breakfast morning, going to be in Freeport. Be in Deer Grove for lunch, and we'll have dinner in Rochelle. And then Thursday we'll be at the train loader in Polo, Illinois. So I've got several meetings there in northern Illinois. I guess good thing that we're not competing against one another. We're at other sides of the state. So farmers will be able to have all kinds of opportunities to get everybody's opinion in the next week or so.
Yeah,
here.
That Freeport run, that's deep up there in the northern part of the state. I've only made that trip a couple of times, but that's a long haul up there.
Well, yeah, you're almost in Wisconsin. But there's a listening audience up there, believe it or not, Todd.
There's a lot of people
up in that area that listen to us.
All right. So, and can I bring you back to the ethanol plant that you're headed to? Because I was reading the spread, and you heard that number. It's just 19.5 cents, the spread between crude oil and the ethanol. Those are both spot months. That's really, really narrow by comparison as to where it has been. It's been as wide, I think, when I started tracking it, which wasn't very long ago in August. It was 60 cents, so it was a lot more. There was a lot more margin there. Are the ethanol plants getting squeezed pretty hard at this point now or not?
Well, if you look at the statistics, I mean, we've kind of had a recovery in corn grind. I mean, last week or a week ago, I guess, it was 87.7 million bushels in corn grind. The week before, it was about 85, and prior to that, it was like 82. So we have seen a pickup in ethanol grind and production of ethanol, so they must be at least making some money. They're probably not, gathering large profits, but to see that pick up in grind, that was one of the bullish influences in corn yesterday. Of course, today we kind of erased all of that. But it all depends upon which plant, how efficient they are, how good the merchandiser is buying in grain. And all that. So there's a lot of variables. But it appears that, at the moment anyway, there's no backing off of ethanol grind. It looks like it's picking up a little bit.
On the charts for corn, I've been taking a look at it just very quickly. And it appears that there's a whole lot of consolidation after we made those highs in August, and then we came back down to a low where was that in late September. But we've kind of spiraled across here. It seems it's a formation that seems like it's more base building a lot of times, but is it maybe a bit scary? I'm not sure. How do you see that one?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to take a broad brush look at it, yeah, you would probably say that it's a big base around 714, low points 715 on the low side on the March corn futures, and then the high points here have been about 775. We had a high October 12th of 775.75, and our high here the end of November was 76.5. So you could square that up and say that is just a big basing period to move higher, or get ready for the next leg down. And but it is a basing period. Now, I kind of got it drawn in more as a wedge formation. I kind of drew a line off of the October high and the November high, and then that shows you breaking out of that wedge formation there on November 26th. And we had that quick run on up to the 776.5 area, and now we've come back to that point of breakout and congesting. We've got about 5 days here in a row here, basically trading in this, 748 to 760 area in here. So I kind of view it as kind of a basing period. Now, if this breakout is any good, then we should see the resumption of the trend in the direction of the breakout. And since it broke to the upside, then technicians are kind of waiting for the resumption to reassert itself in the corn market. The problem is, I don't know what's going to cause that, at least at the moment, because you can take a look at how bad our export demand is in corn. We only sold like 52,000 tons of corn. Overall, year to date, I think we're down like 46%. So we just ain't selling no corn. There's no export book on. But the ethanol grind is you know, purring along pretty much at USDA's projections. I think, you know, there's still a big debate about what size of crop we have, but we're not going to know that for a while. That's still another 6 weeks or so away. Or I guess we are in December, so but we're at least 5 weeks away where we get the December 1 stocks number, and the USDA then will back out of that and see what kind of overall production number we did have. So, and there's many believe that harvested acres are going to come down in that. We got a much smaller crop, but we'll have to kind of wait and see on that. I think our competing countries are about out of corn, so I do expect to see some export demand begin to pick up after the first of the year. But then we've got another big issue in front of us that we talked about last week is the lower Mississippi here. It's just a matter of time, it looks like, that that's going to be shut down in a couple weeks. But the Army Corps and engineers keep promising they're going to try to keep it going to the end of the month anyway, the end of December. But that's going to have to shut down, and then all of a sudden the only way to get stuff down to the Gulf is through the rail. And the rail is already at capacity, and it can only probably ship, I think I read a statistic here today, normally we take about 5.5 million tons through that Granite City lock to go south during the December-March time frame. And if we go to the rail, you'll only be able to get about 2.5 million tons down there. So you'll only be able to get about half the grain down here to the Gulf. Now, the export facility the group visited last summer, Zeno Grain, we have all the rail capacity, but we can't get the trains down fast enough. We have the most rail capacity to unload the rails into the vessels, but the rail line is backed up to get those trains down here. And, you know, soybeans is the one that has a big book in it. Everybody's loading beans to China. And it could create some interesting twists and turns as we go down the road. We may end up rationing inventory because we can't get it to the buyer because of our transportation system.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting and fun to watch. It's certainly going to line up as a unique winter set of months, I think, here in the Midwest.
Well, I was kidding with one of my buddies that if they start blowing up that rock down there, that probably caused the New Madden fault line to break and might split Illinois in half, and then you guys will be able to succeed from Chicago, maybe.
Huh? That depends on where the line runs.
Yeah, might split it down the Illinois River and empty out the Lake Michigan.
Yeah, we'll see. Hey, thanks so much, and we'll look for you next week, or at least have fun here in the state of Illinois next week.
Okay, sure will. Thanks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. He'll be making his way across the state of Illinois next week. If you didn't catch all the places he will be, you can pick those up off our website just by listening to this program at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, Dave Dick is here now. He has today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the United Nations Food Body today called for an improvement in the governance of large-scale agricultural investments. The Rome-based Food and Agriculture Organization urged corporate investors, international organizations, and governments to ensure such investments are both socially beneficial and environmentally sustainable because of concerns about their negative impact, especially in poor countries. Potential adverse impacts of such investment include the loss of grazing land, income and livelihoods for rural people, and the lowering of quality of natural resources such as land, water, and biodiversity. The European Union today is asking the World Trade Organization's settlement panel to rule on Argentine import restrictions. In a statement, the EU's executive said the Argentine measures have been harmful to European trade and investment for more than 18 months. The EU is challenging regulations and policies that Brussels says close off the Argentine market to merchandise imports. Argentina requires importers to obtain licenses from the government that are not automatically renewed for products ranging from cars to electronics, a complicated process that the EU contends discourages companies from buying foreign-made products. Smithfield Foods' fiscal second quarter earnings plummeted 91% as the pork producer recorded a large debt extinguishment charge while revenue edged down. For the quarter ending October 28th, Smithfield reported a profit of $10.9 million or 7 cents a share versus a year ago profit of $120.7 million or 74 cents a share. Sales slipped 2.6% to $3.23 billion. Total pork sales, the biggest contributor to Smithfield's revenue, edged down 1.9%. Smithfield's international business recorded a decline of 8.3%. A United Nations agency says today that food prices fell by 1.5% last month, with the international prices of all commodities except dairy products dropping. The Rome-based Food and Agriculture Organization today says that the decline puts the value of its November index nearly 3% below a year ago. Sugar prices underwent the sharpest drop, followed by oils and cereals. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program will post by about 6 o'clock Central Time USA tomorrow evening to our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our guest this week is Michael Cordoni-Hare. We'll, of course, take a look at South American crop prospects. Now, up next, you know the fertilizers that help farmers raise food sometimes don't always stay put, but most of the time they do. Decades of University of Illinois research is now narrowing in on some possible solutions to clean up those issues. Researchers at the University of Illinois have been studying the ability of wetlands to remove nitrates from tile drainage water for about 20 years. David Kovacic says the work proves wetlands can remove about half of the annual nitrate load. Kovacic is putting this knowledge to work near Bloomington, Illinois, in hopes of adding a twist to the research.
What also is interesting is that nobody, however, has ever shown that wetlands can actually clean up stream water. Although we know they can work, nobody's ever put enough into a watershed, enough wetlands into a watershed to actually show that they remove and improve the water quality by reducing nitrate concentrations.
To that end, Kovacic is developing a pair of watersheds near Bloomington, Illinois. One will include a constructed wetland, the other will not.
What we hope to find is that in the watershed with the wetland, that when water leaves the wetland, the first order stream water quality will be improved. Hopefully we'll remove nitrates by 30% or 40%.
Fewer nitrates than its paired watershed, that is. And if it works, the city of Bloomington, Illinois, which gets its water supply from both watersheds, could avoid building a nitrate treatment facility, a plant that comes at the cost of millions of dollars and needs to be used maybe once every 2 decades to clean up high nitrate levels. The constructed wetlands, by contrast, cost about $8,000 an acre to build and have essentially no maintenance cost. Still, even if the idea works, it would require landowners in the watershed to cooperate, says Rick Twait, superintendent of water purification for the city of Bloomington, Illinois.
This particular wetland is being built on city property, which is managed by McLean County as a park, and we would like to use this as a demonstration site for landowners to come in at their leisure to see what it would look like on their land. And we would actually need to have cooperation with landowners within the watershed in order to get sufficient wetland area numbers in order to decrease the nitrates coming in to our reservoirs to where it would be low enough to where we could not have to worry about treating nitrate.
Well, it's a nice trade-off, but on the flip side, it takes a lot of property, about 2.5 acres for every 100 acres of cropland in the watershed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Let's check the cash grain markets now with Matt Bennett. He's at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start out with your prices first today.
All right. Cash price on corn, $7.50. Fall 13, $6.16. Cash beans, $14.89. Fall 13, $13.02.
Your assessment of basis in the corn market?
Well, you know, we fell off a little bit there last week. It's kind of held a little bit this week for the most part. We haven't seen any major changes. And so I think everyone's just kind of on a wait-and-see approach. There's a lot of apprehension figuring out what's going to happen with the river. So kind of a wait-and-see approach right now.
What do you think will happen?
Well, I think, you know, when it's all said and done, there's going to be a lot of stuff railed and going down on a truck south, you know, whether they go all the way to the Gulf or not, or whether they get past Cairo is another thing. It's going to be hard to tell, but obviously, you know, it's going to be a situation that they're going to have to figure something out within the next 3 to 4 weeks.
How much will it impact the local basis here, and in which direction?
Well, it's tough to tell. Generally speaking, it would be a negative impact on basis, but we're so tight on both corn and beans, and obviously on beans there's just a ton of demand, and so it's going to be tough to tell. This year could be a little bit more of an anomaly. You don't know for sure whether that basis fluctuation is going to be passed on to the person that's buying on the other end. You know, it's tough to tell.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast here at willag.org.
It's Feast of Nicholas Day, patron of bakers, barrel makers, brewers, and coopers. On this day in agricultural history in 1492, Columbus sighted the island now known as Haiti and the Dominican Republic. In 1766, Johann Bodmer was born, a Swiss mechanic. He was a prolific inventor of textile-making machinery, including machines that made the process from carding to spinning wool continuous. In 1863, Charles Hull was born, a U.S. chemist. He invented an inexpensive process for extracting aluminum from its ore using carbon electrodes with homemade batteries and sodium aluminum fluoride. Before that discovery, aluminum was considered a precious metal like gold or silver. Afterwards, it went for 18 cents a pound. In 1945, the microwave oven was patented. And in 2006, an outbreak of illness from the dangerous E. coli 0157H7 was reported, with green onions as the suspected cause. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt not available for the weather forecast this afternoon, but Drew Lerner is here. He has an update on what the forecast looks like for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet.
Rain and snow are likely to occur across portions of the Midwest as we go through the weekend and into early next week. A couple of storm systems will be responsible for the precipitation, but we're not expecting it to be very heavy, except perhaps along the Ohio River Valley and southward into parts of the Tennessee River Basin and a portion of the U.S. Delta. All three of these areas will likely see rain totals during the latter part of the weekend and early next week, running anywhere from a quarter to three quarters of an inch, and some local totals getting upwards to an inch and a half. The precipitation will be sufficient to help to increase some runoff and raise the river level on the Ohio. U.S. hard red winter wheat country will likely see a little bit of precipitation both today and again late Saturday into Sunday. In both cases, the precipitation will occur as snow and a little bit of rain, and it will be focused on Nebraska, with a few areas in northern Kansas and northeastern Colorado being impacted as well on an infrequent basis. The precipitation, though, that is expected in the hard red wheat areas will certainly fall short of what is necessary to restore moisture to normal values, and that's going to be multiple inches, and it will have to be spread out over many storm systems in order to avoid a flood situation. While the forecast with this drought is not going to be changing in that favor, we're going to most likely see ongoing drier biased conditions prevailing through a big part of the winter season. Well, the forecast in the heart of the Midwest is not only offering a couple of weather disturbances over these next couple of days, but we'll also see precipitation occur in the form of snow across the northern parts of the region. Yesterday, it looked like the heaviest snows would occur across Iowa. It now looks as though the heavier snows may be more southeastern South Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, and a part of northern Iowa. And if that's the case, we probably won't anticipate any real substantial runoff until that snow melts somewhere down the road. We do anticipate anywhere from 2 to maybe 5 inches of snow to accumulate across a part of the region, and we'll continue to look for that to occur most significantly at the end of the weekend and on into early next week. A disturbance moving through the Midwest today will produce lighter amounts of precipitation, and it will be focused mostly on areas from Iowa and parts of Missouri over into the Ohio River Valley. But the rain totals with this event will likely run a few hundredths of an inch, upwards to 4 or 5 tenths of an inch, not as big a storm system as that which is supposed to occur at the end of the weekend and into early next week. Our temperatures across the Midwest will likely be trending cooler as time moves along. Bitter cold conditions will occur in the northern plain in the northwestern Corn Belt as we get into the latter part of the weekend and early part of next week. Until then, temperatures won't be too bad, but they'll be cooler than they have been. We expect to see high temperatures across the Midwest today in the 40s and 50s. High temperatures tomorrow will be in the 30s and 40s north and 40s and 50s south, and we'll see the same thing again on Saturday. Some temperatures will drop below 0 Fahrenheit in the northwestern portions of the Corn Belt when we get to the early part of next week.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.